This podcast is sponsored by Sophie Reepdress, a small one-person business based in Philadelphia. She started making leggings and expanded from there over the years, and now she's making caving suits. When she started, she was looking for suits, and she didn't notice a whole lot to choose from, so she decided she would make her own, and her cave suits are among the best. She makes them out of 500 denier cordura. And a little thicker denier cordura where you need it, in the elbows and the knees and your rear end. That's about twice as thick, 1,000 denier cordura. Variety of colors to choose from. She'll make you whatever color you want as long as she's got the material. And they start from basic suits, and she'll put add-ons on there like extra pockets, inside pockets, knee pad pockets. You can just slip the pads right in there. Or a bat stencil, wherever you want it. You want a bat stencil at the top of your butt? Fine. Look, don't let me give you any weird ideas, but I'm just saying, she'll do whatever you want. And everything is made to order just for you. You can find her at SophieReepdress.com, and I'll put her address in the description of this podcast. And you can also follow her on Instagram, where she's got like 30,000 followers. Sophie Reepdress on Instagram. And again, SophieReepdress.com. For one of the best cave suits that you will ever own, I'm going to get one for my wife. Welcome to the Caving Podcast. I'm Matt Pelser of the Central Indiana Grotto. What's a grotto? A grotto is a local chapter of the National Speleological Society. That's our national organization. We are organized because caving is, as you'll hear in part of the interview later on, it's kind of an insular world. We take care of ourselves, and we know, only really we know what it's like to go caving because it is a very specific thing. And it's dangerous if you don't know what you're doing, quite the opposite if you do. It's like a lot of things, you know. And so we have a national organization we encourage cavers to become members of, and we have our local organizations, our local grottos that we encourage our cavers to become members of. And dues are cheap, especially on the local level. And if you want to go caving, we encourage you to do it, but we want you to do it the right way. We want you to contact your local grotto and get in touch with the leadership, and they'll put you in touch with the person who likes to take new people, or the people who like to take new people. And then, you know, the more you do it, the more you know what you're doing. And before you know it, you'll be leading your own trips. So welcome. I am so glad you're here. My guest is Fenn Spencer. He's from the Tag area. I have admired Fenn's online presence, as we'll get into in part of the interview. I'm going to try to keep the intro brief this month. I always say that, but I really do need to do it because it is Halloween today, and it is just about trick-or-treating time as I cut this, and I have had a hell of a day with work and all these other things, and so this has been my one break to get this done, but there's so much other work to do. I got jury duty tomorrow. I don't mean to bring you in to my problems, but there's an awful lot going on in my life right now, and I need to just get to it. So I do want to tell you that I did go caving this past month with the kids. I brought the boys to Sullivan Cave, to my three-year-old's unofficial namesake, and we had a wonderful time. They are still used to taking naps on the weekends, and so we got a little grumpy toward the end, but everybody made it in and out just fine. We also had a four-year-old and a seven-year-old with us, my cousin's kids. He and his wife came as well. My wife came. It was a wonderful little family trip. Just went, if you're familiar with Sullivan Cave, we went to the mountain room and back out. And, you know, we brought all the snacks. We ate all the snacks. And it was a great day. And the three-year-old just fell asleep as soon as we got back in the car. He really wanted a cheeseburger. I mean, don't we all after a cave trip? But he didn't even make it to the restaurant 5 minutes down the road. He crashed. So that I'm hoping the kid's a caver. He got, like I said, got a little grumpy, but I'm hoping the kid's a caver. We'll see. And I do know who I'm going to have next month, and I'll let you know at the end of the episode. But for right now, a man that I have admired for his perspective and his ability, and just the fact that he's a legacy caver, and we talk about all of it. Here is my talk with Fenn Spencer, and a word before we get into it. I had some audio issues. I did the best I could, keeping everything balanced, but he had some connection issues. You know, it happens. It's fine. I just want to let you know what you're in for. Just roll with it and sink into the conversation. I hope it's not too distracting. Here is me and Fenn Spencer. You remember when we ran into each other at Spelio Fest?
Yeah, but I'm a man. I'm going to tell you, I am terrible with faces and names unless I cave with you.
Oh, that's all right. That's all right. No, we didn't go caving. I just, you have a very similar name to my son, Finnegan.
Oh, really?
Yeah. My son is named Finnegan. And I'm going to try to turn him into a caver, though I'm not going to force the issue.
Well, that's a, you either are or you ain't, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's one of those things.
I had a friend of mine one time, a couple of years ago, when I was saying I was teaching Squish, my granddaughter, how to cave.
Yeah.
And he said, man, you already have. And that hit me because, you know, you just take them. You don't teach anybody to cave. You take them to cave, and if they want it, they go for there.
That's right. I follow you on Facebook. I love hearing from you. But I really, really love hearing about your granddaughter. And you started early too, right? When you were just a kid.
From my understanding, my mom was pregnant 6 months with me on my first caving trip.
Yeah?
Yeah, in utero. Apparently, she was bored. my biological father was a caver with the Birmingham Grotto, and my mom was tired of sitting home all weekend. And she went caving. There's a great picture of her and Lynn Guy. They did the American Gothic caver style. And she was 6 months pregnant with me. So I literally do not remember my first cave, to tell you the truth.
So, okay, do you know that cave, or do you know the route she took? Do you know what that was like?
It would have been Lake Pretty Cave, and I have done it as an adult, and that's a cave just right outside of Birmingham, Alabama. But as far as familiarity, it's a lake cave, so it's always very muddy, you know.
Yeah.
But there's not many actual caves in Birmingham itself. You know, we always had to drive to tag to get to the real stuff.
Yeah.
But as a youth, stories is all I've ever heard is stories. It's really been strange. Several times I've been taken to what I thought was going to be a new cave to me, and then I show up and I'm like, oh, I remember this. You know, it just flashes back as a child. So that's always been kind of a trip as an adult, thinking I'm going somewhere new and then find out that it was somewhere I had been, you know, 25, 30 years earlier.
So you've been around then. I mean, if you're recognizing limestone walls, I always have a heart. I mean, I could visit the same cave over and over and over again and not recognize it. That's kind of impressive.
It was more the entrances. I remember probably 10 years ago, went to Camp's Gulf, and I was all excited, you know. I was just ready to go to Camp's Gulf. I haven't been, and we pulled up and at the parking area and then started walking in on the trail and got about halfway down the trail, and I realized that was the area that we used to camp when I was a kid. And so that, and really the on the way to the cave kind of stuff is more on the lines of recognition, because as a kid you spend a lot of times, you know, at the campsite. Back when I was growing up, it was always a weekend thing, you know. If it was a day cave, it was 5 a.m. in the car, you know, 2 hours driving, cave all day, be home at 11 o'clock that night. So there was a lot of weekend caving, to where we would camp out, you know, at the entrance of the cave. Of course, you're talking about the, you know, mid-70s, so a lot of the areas were more open than they are now.
Yeah, let's go back to the very beginning then. I guess I shouldn't be so surprised, but so the grotto, the Birmingham Grotto, said no girls allowed for a little while, and then your mother was the first female member?
Yeah, it actually sounds like a misogynistic statement, which I'm sure part of it was from back in the 60s, but the reality of that, Matt, was, you know, you think about a landowner in the mid to late 60s, early 70s in Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, way out in the woods, and, you know, cavers show up, four or five guys, cavers show up with one female on a Sunday. And, you know, it's like, y'all supposed to, number one, y'all supposed to be in church, but number two, why are you taking that girl underground?
Yeah.
Now my dog's going to bark.
That's all right. That's just real life, man. I don't care. I don't care if a dog barks.
Well, that's Gus the cave dog, man. He gets on rope and he thinks he's supposed to protect everything.
Wait a second. He gets on rope?
No, actually, when I got him, I was single, and that was his job. He, you know, I was doing a lot of caving, and you attach him to a rope, which he's got a leader, and he thinks that, you know, I'm supposed to protect the rope.
Well,
as soon as he gets hooked up, that's what he thinks his job is, to bark at anything that comes near the rope.
Well, that's a good partner.
Yeah, it's from the old days when people would actually, you know, you had fear of people messing with your rope. Yeah.
Does Gus come in the caves if you're doing just horizontal caving?
He went caving with me one time, Rickles Cave in Alabama, and he was fine with it. I mean, he had caved up to that point. He had no problem coming in horizontals. And we got to a pancake crawl, and he turned around and went and sat at the entrance, and he has given it up on it since. That was not for him.
We had a dog follow us pretty deep into a cave in Indiana. The landowner's dog, and the landowner knew, you know, whenever cavers show up, the dog will follow them in so far. But we were in there pretty far, and the dog was still hanging in there. And we were like, "Is this dog ever is he going to be able to find his way out?" And he did. But I always love that when I see dogs going caving with people, because I've tried to take my dogs into just little caves, and they don't want to have anything to do with it whatsoever.
Yeah, I've known some people that, you know, have dogs that they'll go to a certain extent, and then they'll just sit and wait. You know, I think it's more loyalty to the owner than it is actual the adventure part of the dog.
Yeah. So, Mom was the first female officer of the Birmingham Grotto as well, in addition to being the first female member?
Yeah, from my understanding, what would happen, there was a group called the Spiders. They were the Mancho Vertical guys. They all went down, I guess this would have been 71, 72 maybe, and went to Mexico. And some of the guys laid back, the cool guys, and changed the bylaws. And when the Spiders got back from Mexico, the bylaws were changed, and my mom was the first member. Then she became the secretary. And then after she became the secretary, she eventually became president.
Right on.
She ran the newsletter for years. And she was very prominent, you know, she wasn't just your normal caver. She did not get into vertical at all. That wasn't her deal. But she spearheaded the Bankhead Cave Survey. That was her, in a sense, claim to fame. I'm sure she could tell you 1,000 different stories of her career in caving. But the big thing I know was the Bankhead Survey. Oh, her and Bill Terode, I think Bill Terode told her that she would never find a Tennessee Caves Alabama in Alabama. And from my understanding, we went one weekend and I found 7.
Never say never.
Never say never, especially to my mother. No, you want to be proven wrong, she'll make it happen.
Man, running the newsletter, that's a hard job, but an important one. I commend her for that.
Yeah, Birmingham's always had a great newsletter. The Howells, Dave and Valerie Howell, have run it for probably the last 30-plus 40 years, and it's a great newsletter. It's always been one that's very enjoyable.
God bless those people, for sure. So you started on vertical pretty early, it seems like.
Yeah, actually, I had to prove to them, if I wanted to actually go caving, I had to prove to them, as in my mentors, my dad and the other guys, Ken Brown, Ken Kiefer, that I could repair my carbide light blindfolded in whatever situation they gave me. That was before I could actually go caving with them. Vertical caving, it was Dad had set up a ropes course in the backyard. I had to be able to complete that ropes course solo, and when Dad came home and I was doing the traverse line, not upside down, but kind of like Army style, he was satisfied. I remember Stevens Gap and Pipeside as my first one solo at 9 years old. I tell people all the time why it's so important to document your caving trips. I went to the Birmingham Grotto's 50th anniversary, and they had printed out a guidebook, and it had a something from the newsletter, the president's letter or whatever, you know, trip reports and stuff from each decade. I think it was 79, maybe 76, that I read, and there was an article in there by Ken Kiefer of this, what we call the seven versions, where somebody had told him that he couldn't find any, there weren't any pits on his land. And that spring and summer, we went and found seven virgin pits. And one of them, we named Spencer's Drop. My dad and I did it. My last name being Spencer, his, you know, and, I didn't even remember that weekend until, and this has been, what, 10, 12 years ago. I had no recollection of that weekend in my memory bank until I read that article. And when I read that article, that whole summer came back to me.
Isn't that funny?
It's not that we just document things for ourselves. We document them for, you know, generations coming up behind us that can find things about our, you know, ourselves, our family, and, you know, the roots of caving.
I always appreciated it. Well, I didn't always appreciate it. I guess that's part of the point is when I went to my first grotto meetings and they passed around in the CIG, we've got the Spelio log that we'll post in the newsletter. And I'm just like, wait, you, any caving trip we take, we're supposed to put it down. Is that any of your business? And I mean, that's part of it. It's just so there is a record of who's going where and who did what. You don't have to fill it out, but if you do, then it's there forever. And you can look back, and I haven't remembered every caving trip I've ever done, but you look in the Spelio log, and, oh, yeah, I remember that, going with them and them and them.
I have an interesting footnote on that. About 10 years ago, I had a phone call from a University of Alabama student doing a paper on caving, spelunking is what he called it, and wanted to meet me. He'd read, you know, names in the newsletters and wanted to meet me and interview me. So I met him for coffee, and I got there on time, and I waited, and I waited, and I waited, and the guy never showed up. And finally I called him, and the phone rang across the restaurant. The young guy was there, and I said, well, man, I've been here. And he said, yeah, but I was looking for a gray-haired old man. Of course, now I'm a gray-haired old man, but the ages of the newsletter were never printed. So he just had my name, and he had already interviewed several of the other people that were adults at the time. And of course I was 25 years younger than the people he had already previously interviewed. So, you know, those details, yes, they're very important to put down.
This thing, we're kind of jumping around here a little bit, but this, I was delighted to see this post recently, and I'm just a reader. I've never talked to him or met him. Is it Galen?
Galen, yes. We call him Spider.
Oh, yeah, Spider. He is the guy with the solo death rig, right? We'll see him at events.
Yeah, that's Spider.
I've seen him at a Capers or two with the solo death rig. And, yeah, so you took him. Are you comfortable saying where you took him?
Yeah. I think if anybody knows Spider, we know what we took him to Neversink for the anniversary.
It looked like Neversink, yeah.
The story is when he was 17, he went and spent the night on Bill Cuddington's floor and went to Neversink the next day. And the day after went to Natural Well and then made racks in John Cole's garage. And so that was his 55th anniversary of that original drop.
Wow.
And he'd been talking to me, oh, almost 2 years about wanting to do it. And, you know, I guess I'm crazy like that. That's the second time I've done that in the last 3 years. My vertical mentor, Larry Moore, he called me and said, Finn, I just want to be on rope one more time. And I told him, I said, hey, Larry was 83. And I said, well, you know, I'm not going to put you in a cave. And he said, yeah, I just want to be on rope. So we took him to Palisades in Aniana and, let him rappel down the wall there, about a 60-foot wall. He got to climb up about 30 feet. And, you know, he was done, so we picked him off and let him walk out. But Galen, the man can climb. For people that don't know him, he has a neurological motor disease that he was diagnosed with about 30 years ago. And 20 years ago, they told him not to cave anymore. You know, the guy has a hard time walking and talking, but he can climb the hell out of some rope. And I think it's because it's a simplified repetitive motion.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, once he does that, that is easy for him, or not easy, but, you know, it's something he can do. It took more out of him to go up the hill and back down the hill than it did to actually do the pit itself. We started at 6 a.m. and we're back at the truck at 9 p.m.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Who turns 80 this year? Oh, does Marion Smith turn 80 this year?
I think it is.
Yeah.
I think the goat.
The goat. I'd love to be able to talk to him sometime. You mentioned, who is it, John Cole? You got your first rack was a John Cole?
First rack's a John Cole. Still got it. Still have my, it was, my dad gave me my whole kit, excluding the harness, because back then, the harnesses, they were making them out of, you know, one-inch webbing, and the guys that were really getting custom were literally just making them out of seat belts from cars. And I still have my dad's. It's made out of a seatbelt from a car. But for me, they would use just a, you know, the old twisted figure eight Swiss. But I have my Blue Water box. I have my original G-Mars. Had three G-Mars before it was a Texas or a Mitchell. You know, it was kind of a cross thing that everybody was working with whatever back then. But yeah, I still got my John Cole. And still have my original helmet, still got my original carbide lights.
Would you be able to, I mean, I know that racks wear through. Would you be able to use it, or is it kind of shot?
I did use it for nostalgia state, 10 plus years ago on the outside wall. But, you know, it's got the aluminum bars on it, and I'm not big on clays and ropes. And we used a piece of old rope that I had. And used it, but it worked fine. It's got the frame's a little bent, you know, it's a little rusted. I'm sure if I put some time and energy on it, yes, it would be perfectly fine.
I love the idea of repurposing old seat belts for seat harnesses. Do you have an opinion on that? Does that seem safe nowadays? I'm sure somebody would have a strong opinion about it, but I feel like that would hold up if you did it right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as long as the sewing's done correctly.
Yeah.
What's funny is, you know, if I pull out my dad's old one, it looks like the Petzl Vetti now. You know, it's just a basic two-loop wrap with loops in the front for the D-ring. So it's as basic and simple as you can get. But, you know, that's one of the things, you know. It works. Why not?
Let's go through some highlights. I'm sure you've done exploration. You don't just do it for fun, right? You go and find new cave.
Well, my caving career has been very strange. And when I say strange, you know, because when you're born into it as a legacy caver, and I'm not going to say my experience is the same as any other legacy caver, but with me, it was by the time I was 15 or 16, you know, I was done with it. You know, the word adrenaline junkie was not invented then. And so, by the time I was 15 or 16, the only caving I did between 15 and, say, 25 was through my dad's midlife crisis. He'd come kick the bed at 2 o'clock in the morning and say, get up and go. And, you know, we'd do some crazy stuff then. But, yeah, the exploration, that was really, a lot of that was done as a child. You know, my mom and I were famous on the Anvil Cave Rally. You know, that was a big thing back then, and she loved to do that kind of stuff. And, of course, the Bankhead Survey. But the exploration part of my life turned into, hey, everybody expects this from you as a caver. You've always been around. This is your name. This is, you know. So then I had the politic part of my life that, you know, from the 30s until I was late 40s. And now I really call it kind of the ambassador part of my life. It wasn't until I was in my 40s when I had a kid did I realize that, hey, I need to pay dues. You know, I need to join the Alabama Cave Survey because I need to support the groups. You know, if I wanted to know where a cave was, or I wanted to hear about the newest cave or the rescue, I just had to have dinner at my table. And this always sounds funny now in these days, but I never remember a day that there wasn't a white van parked out in front of my house. And that was a caver that was staying at our place for a while.
Yeah. You
know? And so if I wanted to go cave, or I wanted to know about the new cave, or I wanted to know what was going on with exploration, you know, I just listened. It was part of the normal conversation of my family. So, you know, that kind of exposure, you know, you're in it all the time. It doesn't really lead to you doing anything but a caver. I tell people all the time, you know, I get jealous of new cavers, because new cavers have what I, you know, there's the AC story and the BC story. Who I was before caving and who I am after caving.
Right.
And I get excited because I hear about people whose lives, you know, completely changed because of caving. When you're a legacy caver, you know nothing but.
Yeah.
There is no other life except for caving. It always intrudes to the point where, as a, like I said, as a teenager, I was like, you know, I want to go roller skating. I want to go, you know, play ball. I want, you know, I want to do football. And when I was growing up, it's completely different, especially like my granddaughter. She can go to school and she can talk about caving. Of course, you know, she's up here in TAG, but, and people know what you're talking about. When I was growing up, the school life was completely separate from caving life. We were considered weirdos. Matt, I'm telling you, it got to the point as a kid that I would stay in the car until my parents came back out and told me, yes, this restaurant will let us eat here. Yet, you know, because there literally were signs that said no hippies and no blacks, you know.
Wow, man.
And it's really weird because my dad was in the military and, you know, always had short hair, but he was considered a hippie because he hung around, you know, with cavers. You know, as a kid, that was the kind of the, you know, I mean, if anybody's got kids, you know, they ought to, you know, that.
Right, so right. That's what my folks are into.
Right, exactly. And so the time period that I raised my daughter, she really wasn't into caving. And so we did a lot, but always outdoors, you know, had a boat, had a place on the river. And so for that 10, 15 years, she didn't start caving until she was about 16. Her first vertical cave was Sinking Cove. And, you know, she did it for a while, but it wasn't her thing. And, but, you know, it's like alcoholism skips a generation, I guess. But, Squish is all about it. My granddaughter, she is all about it. You know, she just led her third trip the 2 weekends ago to Cedar Ridge Crystal.
Wow. How old?
She'll be 6 next month.
She led a trip and she's on rope too, right? She's doing vertical.
Oh yeah, she's already named her first pit. found one and named it Squishy Squeeze.
Oh, but, are you just pleased as punch with that or what?
Man, you know, I love it when we're talking about it, but then when I get on rope with her, and you know, I'm terrified. You know,
right.
And so you know, she's got a specially designed harness that William and Caroline and I put together that has a. I mean, it's just like a, you know, a Goliath, but it's all sewn in together so that she can't fall out of it. And it has a loop in the back. So we're always tethered in, you know.
Right, right.
Two ropes. And so she's not doing any solo yet. But, yes, and when she comes out and I see her face and the happiness that it gives her to make those accomplishments, yeah, I'm thrilled to death. But when we're actually doing it, I'm, you know, terrified. I mean, I guess as any parent would be, you know, and until she, I don't know if I ever, ever won't be. Did I teach her right? Did I show her the right things? Am I, you know, doing the right thing at this moment? But once again, she's been raised in it, and her very first drop, she used a gree-gree, and it wasn't but a 10-foot outside drop. And everybody was looking at the video and was amazed of it. You know, oh, she has so the smile on her face, this, that, and the other. And I was going, but look at that rope management. Look at that rope management. And she did. She, when she got to the bottom, she was twirling the ropes out from under her feet. You know, she was talking to somebody the other day, and they asked her, well, you know, are you tying any knots? And she said, well, I got my figure eight down, but I haven't got to the double bunny ears yet. And I'm like, this is a five-year-old talking, you know, she's six next month, but this is a five-year-old saying that she has got her figure eight down, which she does, you know, and her rope management, seeing that of her safety. When I go to work in the morning, she asked me to repeat the rules. And the rules are seat belt, hands on the wheel, eyes on the road, safety first, Papaw.
Oh.
You know, her ideology is safety first, and it's come from the caving community. And when somebody asks her who she trusts, she says her caving family.
Oh.
And, you know, you can't replace that. You can't pay for that. So, you know, that's what thrills me to death. I tell you about Sarah, this past Sarah. I was coming down the hill with Squish, that's her nickname, and all my life, anytime I've walked into a caving event area, it's been kind of like, you know, Cheers. Remember that show Cheers? Yeah. When a guy walk in the bar and they go, Norm! Well, you know, I would walk in the tent, you know, whatever, and Finn! Well, this year at Sarah, we came down the hill to the vendor's row, and it was Squish!
She's famous.
Well, yeah, and I completely lost my identity to a five-year-old child, but I'm proud of that, you know, so I'm very comfortable with that.
I know exactly what you mean, though, about being terrified. Man, my kids are not cavers yet. They've been in a couple caves, but I, you know, I have nightmares all the time about, like, vertical and showing them things or like something happening. And I'm like, you know, this is a world that I brought them into. And, you know, this wouldn't have happened. You know, this thing that hasn't happened, but this thing that I had a nightmare about wouldn't have happened had I not been a caver or brought them into that world. I know exactly what you mean there. But it sounds like she's really got it together and you should be proud of that.
Yeah, we did Tumbling Rock this weekend and Donnie Bettinger put together a kid's trip. Yeah, you know, we took them back to the King Shower, and watching her, you know, there was, you know, 10 people on the trip, so that she and I were not always together. And watching her, she finds her own path, and she does not follow whatsoever. She will find her own path in climbing the route. You know, general direction, yes, but as far as what. Basically, she has learned, like me, I'm a small person, the path of least resistance. And to watch her do that, I know it equates to the outside world. I know that safety first equates to how she handles the outside world. And I find that to be the biggest reward of all is watching her maturity and how she handles and navigates the world outside of caving and the benefits that come from that.
You were talking about not knowing life before caving versus after caving and that, you know, the sort of unique perspective that you have being a legacy caver. But you are, I mean, at least my illustration of you in my mind from, you know, just kind of knowing you parasocially from Facebook posts and things like that, you do seem like an introspective, you know, sort of appreciative person who thinks a lot. When would you say you came to sort of appreciate the fact that this was a part of your life, you know, from the beginning, the fact that caving was and is what you are and what you're into, as opposed to it just being, you know, sort of it is what it is kind of thing. The fact that you were raised among cavers, raised going caving, and it was all you knew. When did you finally, was there a moment when you kind of was like, yeah, I really do like this because I like caving, not just because I was raised around it?
This is going to sound ironically funny. When I started dating my lady 5 years ago, she was the very first person to actually comment on my style of caving and especially rope work. We had done several caves together, and she mentioned how natural it was for me versus the other people in the group, that each person would have a gig or each person would have a complaint or something. And for me to just be able to walk up hook in and go with zero complaints. And no matter what was in front of me, I just handled it. And that was probably one of the greatest compliments I'd ever received in my life. And it was the first time I ever actually looked at me as, oh, wait a minute. Okay, it's inherent in me. These things that people struggle so hard for that I watch, you know, when they're fighting rope. And I call it rope zen, the blessing that I was trained on rope with Carbide. Mm. You know, and so, you know, I also look at it as how crazy my damn mentors and my parents were that they'd let a 7-year-old get on rope with Carbide, you know. But at the same time, the appreciation there is the same, the appreciation of why I let Squish go like she is because I believe people don't have limits. It's only self-limitations that they give themselves. And you can find that those limits can easily be pushed into the cave-in arena. And that's where I push myself. I do things not in the caving world, but in the outside world, basically putting people on rope like Galen. You know, everybody else thought I was out of my mind, you know. But I know my people. I know my crew. I know the people, and I know their abilities. And I have, you know, I'm a facilitator. There was no way I could do that trip, just me and Galen. It was not possible. I needed people for moral support. I needed people to be rigging, master riggers, not just people that can, you know, tie some double bunny ears and drop. But I needed people who instantly knew how to drop change from lower to 3-to-1 immediately. And I knew that I wasn't going to be able to be there to do that. So I gathered the friends that I know were in that capability, and they handled it. You know, Galen handled that whole drop. He did the drop by himself. He did the climb by himself. And then the last 5 feet, he said his left leg just quit working. And my guys, you know, Sam Moore, Matt Ward, the 3-to-1 was already there. It was on it. It was William Shoesbury, Carolina, shout out to them. They gave me 350-foot of rope that was brand new, never been used. And we wanted that specific length of rope to make that drop for Galen. And, you know, so that we could lower him if there was a problem, we could pull him out if there was a problem. And we only needed 5 feet, but it was there.
Yeah.
You know, and it was instantly there. And that's what I have found, is you can't do any of this by yourself. You know, we always say the 3-people rule, but, you know, the better your team is, the better you are. And personally, for me, that I have a great team. I have a great family. My caving family is, I guess it's how, like, indie racers and, you know, NASCAR racers and jet pilots and helicopter pilots, they all know they have to have a support. You know, the person that's on the rope might be the star of the moment, but none of that could happen unless they had their support group. You know, you ask about that moment. That was the moment was, okay, yeah, I'm good at this, but I would not be good if I did not have my people. It's not possible. So that's what I love about caving, is the people, the family, the unity that comes with it, despite all the drama.
Well, I mean, and I, you know, the best cavers are sort of well, in my opinion anyway, the best cavers are sort of the humble cavers, the ones who are good at it, but, you know, don't go around saying as much. And that's not to say that there are a lot of cavers who do say that they're good and that aren't. That's certainly the case. There's definitely some cavers out there who can brag and who do it. But anyway.
One of my quotes is, one of the rarest things you'll find in a cave is a humble caver.
In a cave, yeah. Once you get out, it's a little different.
Yep, I agree with you.
Yeah. So you mentioned drama. I don't know if you want to get into this or not, but you had told me kind of candidly that you caught some flack for trying to encourage caving among a broader swath of sort of demographics or what?
Oh, yeah. You know, my mom being one of the, as they say, I've got it down pat. My mom broke the ceiling, and you know, my granddaughter is going to hold it open for the next generation. It's always been a male-dominated sport, and it's you know, definitely been a Caucasian-dominated sport. And we as Americans are, you know, it's across our society are divided. But I've always been a big promoter of women in the sport, mainly, one, because I love women, you know, that's just the way it is. But two, they're badass cavers.
Yeah.
I mean, they are badass cavers. They, you know, they think in a different way that, you know, they're complex in their thinking and can, and, you know, if they're allowed. My experience at first for a long time was guys would teach women how to cave, but they wouldn't teach them how to rig.
Mm.
And so, you know, that seemed to me kind of like a little trap. You know, I'll show you this great, wonderful thing, but then I won't teach you how to I won't teach you how to do it by yourself. So any of the vertical people across the board that I mentor, you're going to learn how to rig. You know, that's simple. But it, more on the lines of, yeah, I believe that, to me, Matt, when you walk inside, I don't care who you are, what color you are, what sex you are, the moment you walk inside the cave entrance, crawl inside of it, enter the cave entrance, to the moment you leave, there is no thought that enters your head except for that experience. You don't think about the flat tire. You don't think about the bills that are due, the fight with the boyfriend or the girlfriend. That is if you want to have a safe trip. But it's literally pushed out of you. So you get this clearing of your mind, body, and soul when you go on a cave trip. For people that have never experienced it, it can be a little intimidating. But once they do experience it and they can't figure out, you know, I just spent eight hours underground working harder than I've ever worked. Why am I not tired? And one, of course, it's adrenaline. But two, it's the cleansing of not having to think about all the junk.
Mm-hmm.
It literally centers you into being in the moment. And I think it's a great life lesson for anybody, a great experience for anybody. I've led trips to Toman Rock with scouts before and get up to the top of Sugarloaf Mountain and you know, a parent just be like, I'm done right here. And we're like, well, you know, we got 5 hours worth of caving left, you know, and we're not going to take you back out. Well, here's some space blankets and some Gatorade and some beef jerky. We'll see you in 4 hours. And only one time did I come back and the parent was scared of being left there,
right,
and had to be taken out by someone. The other ones, especially the women, were like, that was the most peaceful 4 hours I ever had in my life. Thank you for doing that. And so, you know, it quiets the outside world. And I believe that everybody should be able to experience that. Because in reality, for all the things that we do in this world, all the opportunities we have in this world to have downtime, the money we spend on shrinks, the money we spend on prescription medications, you know, you could borrow a helmet, some gloves, and go caving for a day and get the same treatment.
God, I'm glad you said that, because I feel the exact same way. I mean, when you are in that sort of situation, I feel like it could only be bested by cave diving, where you really, really got to be focused on every little thing in order to just make it out alive. But yeah, when you're caving, you can't really afford to be thinking about anything else. It's like a form of meditation. It's like, you know, when you're meditating, I mean, there's a lot of ways to meditate, but one way is to sit and focus on a point on the wall, or to at least sit and focus on your own consciousness. And when you find yourself being distracted, you snap back into it. That's the whole game. But caving is sort of like a physical form of that, and mental too, for that matter, just slightly different. And I really appreciate that parallel, that perspective. Thank you for that. But at the same time, yes, it should be afforded to all, and I don't think you'll find many people that disagree with that. What do you think it is about the people who sort of fight us on the idea of opening it up to more people? I get the feeling that the people who don't like that idea aren't, they're not necessarily hateful people, but they're just people who don't think it's a problem. People who don't think that we're being exclusive, I guess. People who are like, no, if somebody showed up, if a person of color or a woman or a, you know, LGBTQ person showed up to a meeting and wanted to go caving, we'd go caving. I'm not keeping anybody out, but that's kind of not the point, is it? The point is we need to be actively saying, hey, all are welcome. Is that kind of where you are with it?
There's two points to that. Yes, I believe all are welcome, but what you're asking is the reluctance. I don't think it's actually a reluctance. What I think it is the human nature of resistance to change. Mm. Yes, some of my best friends are the people who are resistant to the change, and I cannot blame them a bit because they like what they have. And that is fine. That by me saying that they need to change is no different than them saying I'm crazy for wanting everybody to go caving. Mm. They have the right to that opinion. They have the right to their life. And if they don't want things to change, that's fine. I just happen to be one of those people that I accept change. I've told people, you know, there's actually a quote. It was said about me in one of the most drama times of my life in caving. And that was, the problem with Ben Spencer is he can see things that other people can't imagine, and that pisses them off. And my reply to that was, I am not playing a game. You know, actually the first part of that quote was, I see five moves ahead of everybody else, but I'm not playing a game. I'm a wave rider. I learned early on in my life, and maybe it was because I was raised as a caver, to ride the waves. They're going to change. Today's going to be sunny. Tomorrow's going to rain. That's how things are. Today may be good, you know, tomorrow may be rough. Yeah. And to ride with that wave. And I believe that the all-inclusive wave is not only here in America and the world, where everybody should have equal rights and equal opportunities. Doesn't mean I should pay for it. Doesn't mean it needs to come out of my pocket. It just means that if somebody says, hey, I want to do it, then I should be there to help them do it. That's my own personal view. So that kind of, you know, brings it to where I'm at. You were asking about the exploration of caving. I truly believe, like we're doing right now, we are caving into each other. I'm finding about you. You're finding out about me. And so experiences with people is a caving trip. If you get to know somebody's caving trip, I've often said, you know, people are like caves. Some are beautiful on the outside and just hell holes on the inside. You know, and opposite, some of them are terrible to get into, but once you get into, they're filled with, you know, it's very hard to get in, and it's dark and, you know, it's gloomy, but once you get inside, you see some of the most beautiful things you'll ever see in the world. And so I truly feel like that I want to be, have always been one of the people that want to embrace change, because seriously, man, I'm just, you know, tired of fighting it.
I feel you, man. We're all pretty tired. So the gentleman caver, I love it, man. Anytime I see a post, I click on it. You started that, right? The Facebook group?
Yeah, it's actually a private group, and I'd like to start it out by saying that when it did get started, I didn't want to be, you know, here we go from me saying that I want everybody to be inclusive, but then I started a private group that's just guys caving. We did do a poll and ask quite a few women in the caving world, wives, girlfriends, what they thought about it, and they... First of all, they said, well, we've already got a private women's group, so, you know.
And that's fine.
It's nothing new. But they encouraged it because the Gentleman Caver is a group in which, you know, to bring class and upstanding integrity to the caving world, we can talk about not only things that are going on in the caving world, but any issues that, you know, we come across as men and have to deal with that are challenging. And I'm hoping one day it catches on a little bit more. You know, let's bring some class to the to the caving world was, you know, we don't always have to be muddy. You know,
yeah.
We don't always have to be hardcore. And guys have issues that, you know, that are fair to talk about, that maybe, you know, that a guy will talk about that he won't talk about when he knows that, you know, a woman is listening to. And so that's pretty much how the Gentleman Caver got started.
Yeah. And you know, if you're not familiar, or if you are a female and you're not a member, the thing about the Gentleman Caver Facebook group is just that it's, we really are being gentlemen about it. I've never seen a crude post, maybe a few cartoons that are kind of funny. I'm seeing one here of two bats hanging on the ceiling. It says sleeping this way makes more sense guano-wise. Okay, so that's about as dirty as it gets. You know,
it
really is just a discussion, a news forum. Lots of great stuff is posted, and I just really appreciate it. And it's sort of been my window into your world, among other posts that you've made. And I don't know. I think you got the whole online caver persona thing down, man.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. At the end of the day, cavers are my family. You know, people call it family. You know, you can call it a cult. We got secret locations, secret stickers, secret handshakes, you know, whatever. But all you got to do is pull out the NSS manual. And if you want to take a trip across the country, you know, you just pick a state. Give a call, give an email, and let people know you're coming through, and you're going to have a hot dinner, and you're going to have a couch, you know? And again, cavers have, man, I would not have known what Led Zeppelin was if it wasn't for a caver. It was cavers, when my biological father left me and my mother, it was cavers, it was literally the Birmingham Grotto cavers that sat down in a group and said, we're going to surround this woman and this kid. And we're going to help them. And, you know, Dave, Valerie Howell, John Attaway, Ken Brown, Ken Kiefer, Larry Moore, Joe Donanovich, Milo Washington, all, you know, I consider every one of them, you know, the ones that are gone, rest in peace. But they were my family. They were my uncles. They were my friends. They, you know, and I had a, before my mom met the guy I call my dad, Steve, who, you know, Birmingham Grotto member, and they get married, and he adopted me when I was 9. These are my family, and I still talk to them today. I still, you know, am friends with them today. We might not cave together today, but I took a piece of each one of those people to become who I am today. You know, the smart ass in me, I go straight to saying Milo Washington, you know. The gentleman in me, John Attaway, Dave Howe. You know, I can just tell you who those parts of me I adopted that helped raise me and show me how to be who I am. You know, I have forever gratitude for that. And that's why you find me promoting the family in the way that I promote it. It's because I truly love my family. And even the guys and girls that I don't get along with, I still respect them because, you know, they're cavers. Mm-hmm. And they've got their own world. They've got their own idea. And if they ever needed help, guess who would be there? That's just how it is.
What else you want to cover, man? Favorite trips, favorite caves, final reflections? Is there anything we missed?
Well, I'd like to thank Matt for what he's doing, Matt Pelzer. He's the caving podcast guy. He's really making some people very happy. Because you're getting so many different points of view and opening up. Each one of your podcasts is like a cave trip. Like I say, you get to know somebody in our world and our family a little bit more intimately than you would, you know, just sitting at the cave fire. I really appreciate you inviting me on. You know, of course, I want to give a shout out to the NSS and the SDCI for what they do. You know, if it wasn't for them, a lot of the stuff we couldn't do, especially the SCCI, you know, just about every cave we do here in Tag now that we take somebody to and new is with the SCCI. They've done some fabulous, fabulous work. For all the cavers that came before us, you know, Bill Trode, Gerald Moni, the GOAT, you know, Marion, people like that who, you know, still trailblazing today, still going on. You know, Spider, they're just inspirations. And, you know, I can only hope to be half the men that they are. You know, one day I might grow up.
That's one thing, man, that I really love about the caving world is you see these people who are up there in years and they're still doing it. And that's all I want for you know, the latter part of my life is to just still be able to do some of this stuff. Maybe not all of it, but some of it. And it's really inspiring. You're absolutely right.
Well, you know, you got these new generations that are coming up being able to be, you know, have people, you know, like Marine Handler, you know, what she's doing with NSS and in the headquarters, you know, every month she has a work day down there. And, you know, and that's time given out of her personal life dedicated to caving. And, you know, the example that of not just being underground, but, you know, how to serve other people that are, what is it, our society becomes great when a person plants a tree that they know they'll never rest under the shade of. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're seeing now is, you know, we're coming up third and fourth generation cavers. This society only started in the 30s. So, you know, a lot of us are getting older, a lot of us are fading away, but you got some super cavers coming up that are really making some hardcore impressions in the world. You got, you know, Clinton Elmore, Aiden Campbell, you know, and I know a bunch of my young guys are going to be pissed off at me because I don't, you know, I'm not throwing all their names out there and giving them credit, but, you know, Matt Ward, he's one of them, you know, some that are really just, you know, Robbie Jones, some guys are really making some hardcore caving exploration going down. You know what I mean? Jay Slavefoot, Donnie Bittinger, they're really making, James Hoffman, they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're doing that caving. You know, Chuck Sutherland, they're making the world a better place because they have this bigger platform they can work with that, we're reaching more people, but they're actually doing the groundwork, you know, that's making it happen, you know, and that's what's impressive to me is that the soldiers are still marching on no matter what. And so I feel very confident that the caving world is never going to be like the climbing world, thank God, because, you know, helicopters can't go in caves to rescue, you know. So, you know, it's kind of a self-regulated society. It's just never going to be huge. But I think it's becoming more and more united every day through work of the people that are starting to see, you know, how important our family is, how important what we do is as far as, you know, if you like to drink water, you need to take care of caves. It's as simple as that. And they're getting that message out. And that's what's important to me.
Absolutely, Finn. Great points. Man, it is such a pleasure to have talked to you. And I was so glad to run into you at SpeleoFest in 2021 after seeing your posts online and everything. I knew it was you immediately. It was great to talk to you then. It was great to talk to you this time, man. I appreciate it.
When you get down here, I'll take you to my favorite cave.
Okay. All right. we'll it'll be revealed then. Man, I'm in for it. I'll let you know when I can make it down.
Well, if you know me, you know what my favorite cave is. I just don't tell everybody.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. I'll get to know you a little better. I'll log that somewhere in the memory banks.
Right on, brother.
Thank you, man.
Have a great one.
I appreciate you, Finn. Delightful human being there, Finn Spencer. Thanks for rolling with the audio issues, and thanks for hanging out again. This is a monthly podcast. It comes out on the first of every month, and I forgot to mention in the intro, and this will be real quick, I promise, that I'm the keynote speaker at the Winter Adventure Weekend at Carter Caves State Resort Park in Kentucky. And that is happening the last weekend of January. If you can make that, that'll be great. It'd be a great weekend of caving and cave talk. And I'll be speaking on Saturday night. And it'd be really, really cool if a bunch of cool cavers showed up and I got to hang out with you. That'd be great. So I'd love to see you there. I'll put a link in the description of this podcast so you can check that out. Thanks to our sponsors, past and present, Swago, swagogear.com. Organic Robot Designs. You can visit organicrobotdesigns.com or go to the Etsy store. But Charlie will make t-shirts for your grotto. Do a little fundraising or maybe just so everybody's got t-shirts. I don't know. El Spelio. Thank you, El Spelio. I believe El Spelio is being sold by On Rope One now. And, of course, Sophie Reaptress. Get those cave suits. SophieReaptress.com. Got a link in the description of this podcast to that as well. Am I forgetting anything? Oh, who's next month? I'll tell you who's next month. Chad McCain. Chad McCain is December. Can't wait for you to hear that one. If you know Chad, you know this was a solid talk. Anyway, we'll see you then, December 1st. Until then, my name's Matt Pelser from the Central Indiana Grotto, and kill nothing but time.